Pasuk tells us in last week's parsha, just he sees in connection with the mitzvah of Shabbos, Ach es Shabbos oisai tishmeru. HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicated, instructed Moshe Rabbeinu to communicate to Klal Yisrael that they should keep my Shabbos. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes Shabbos in the possessive form, my Shabbos. So the Rebbe Reb Heschel writes in his Sefer Chanukas HaTorah, he's from the 1600s in Krakow. And the same idea is found in the Shlach HaKadosh's comments on Masechta Shabbos. He was around the 1600s in Prague. He later moved to Eretz Yisrael to Tzfas. But from the similar time period, similar part of the world, both had a similar idea that perhaps HaKadosh Baruch Hu was communicating here that we are supposed to keep Shabbos in the same manner in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu rested after the 6 days of creation. And just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world through speech, as the Pasuk says in Sefer Tehillim, or the equivalent of speech, Kaviyachal speech, as the Pasuk says, Bidvar Hashem Naasu, Uberuch Piv Kol Tzva'am, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world through equivalent of speech. So too, we would be obligated to refrain on Shabbos, to rest on Shabbos, in a similar fashion as well, to not engage in speech, which could itself lead to a creative activity. Just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, perform creative activities through speech, we should not engage in speech either that could lead to a creative activity. And in this coming week's parsha as well, the architect of the Mishkan, of course, is Bezalel, who's described as Vayumale Oisai Ruach Elikim. He became full of a divine spirit. And the Gemara comments in Masechtas Brachos, in what sense was he similar to a Kadosh Baruch Hu? Just like a Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world through speech, Bidvar Hashem Naasu. So to Bezalel was Yodea Letzarif Oisio Shenivru Behen Shamayim Vaoretz. That's what the Gemara says in Masechtas Brachos, Daf Nun Hei Amud Aleph. He knew how to combine letters through which he was able to create the world. And Rashi there explains, Ubesefer Yetzira Tani Lehu. Through his speech, through evoking the Sefer Yetzira, he was able to create the world. And of course, all of our observance of Shabbos is patterned after the malachas that took place at the time of the building of the Mishkan, that we are not allowed to engage in those 39 categories of actions that the Klal Yisrael engaged in order to create the Mishkan, the same activities that we are prohibited from engaging in on Shabbos. So if Bezalel created the Mishkan through speech, Yodea Hayah Bezalel Tzarek Ben Oisios, that was be able to create a physical manifestation of the Mishkan, so too we should be prohibited, we should refrain from speech, which could lead to a creative activity on Shabbos. Which is an interesting idea, which might have application to the topic we're going to discuss, but bottom line, the Pasuk tells us in Parashas Yisro, in connection with Shabbos, Lo Sase Kol Melacha. We're prohibited from engaging in physical activity on Shabbos, a physical, lo sasek, kol malacha, physical activity, there is surim derabanan, that perhaps might go beyond that, but strictly speaking, the malachas of Shabbos are limited to physical activities, lo sasek, kol malacha. The question, though, that we need to ask is in light of technological advancements, of voice recognition technology, of, Alexa, or the Amazon Echo, or Google Home, or whatever other device you might have that recognizes your voice and, follows your commands and could, order things from a store for you, put them in your shopping cart, or can, turn on your lights, or turn off your lights, or turn on your air conditioner, turn it off on Shabbos. So what would the nature of that kind of speech be? Would that speech be considered to be a malacha that leads to a creative activity on Shabbos, in which case it would be prohibited? Or is that, that kind of speech that is, kind of passive, you're not really engaging in any kind of physical activity necessarily, so would that not rise to the threshold of loisase kol malacha and could perhaps be permitted on Shabbos? So the Rosh writes in Masechtas Pesachim the following comment. The Rosh tells us, here in Perek Yud, Simen Yud Gimel of Masechtas Pesachim, that we have a tradition that Moshe Rabbeinu, Yosef and David all passed away on Shabbos towards the end of Shabbos. That's why after Mincha and Shabbos in Shul they say three psukim of Tzidek Hadin, Tzidkascha, Tzedek Liyolam, and two other psukim of Tzidek Hadin corresponding to these three tzaddikim, to Moshe Rabbeinu, Yosef and David, who all died on Shabbos towards the end of the day. There's a machlekes, Nusach Ashkenaz, Nusach Sfard. What is the order of the psukim? How do we, do Moshe, Yosef, and David? One each pasuk corresponds to one of these three tzaddikim, but that's the minik. That we say these psukim of Tzidek Hadin, recognizing the righteousness of the justice of the Ribbono Shalom, that these three tzaddikim died towards the end of the day on Shabbos. For that reason as well, the Ramah says we have a minig not to say Divrei Torah, not to learn Torah between Mincha and Marav on Shabbos. That's why most people sit down to Shalosh Shudis. And Shalosh Shudis in shul is usually a time of Bittul Torah. It's not the most rigorous time of Limud HaTorah. In the shul on Shabbos between Mincha and Maariv, usually people are shooting the breeze. They're talking about other inyanim, not heavy divrei Torah. And even the Shalosh Shudis Torah that takes place, is one step above Purim Torah. There's Purim Torah on the hierarchy of Limud HaTorah. Purim Torah is all the way at the bottom. A little bit above that is Shalosh Shudis Torah. And then you get to, real intense Talmud Torah. So it's not, the most intense form of Talmud Torah. And even those who speak at Shalosh Shudis is usually at the end of Shalosh Shudis when the formal Shabbos is already concluded and we're already in the period of Tosefta Shabbos, at which point it's permitted to learn Torah. But we have a minute now to learn, and because Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, and the Gemara tells us that when a tzaddik passes away, his base medrash should be batel as well. His base medrash should also pause their learning in order to recognize the loss that took place. However, the Rosh questions this tradition. If you look over here at the second to the last line in Ois Beis on the source sheet, the Rosh writes in the middle of the line, it's incorrect. Moshe Rabbeinu did not pass away on Shabbos at all, because the Pasuk says in Parashas Vayelech that he was Ben Me'a Ve'esim Shon Anochi Hayoim, and the Medrash comments that Hayoim, on that very day that he passed away, he completed the writing of 13 Sifrei Torah. So if he completed the writing of 13 Sifrei Torah, how was he able to write a Sefer Torah on Shabbos? He was not allowed to write on Shabbos. So concludes the Rosh, must be Moshe Rabbeinu did not pass away on Shabbos, in contradiction to our minig and the long-standing tradition. However, there's some Sefer over here, the third source on the sheet, quotes in the name of the Shloha HaKadosh, that Moshe Rabbeinu did indeed write these 13 Sifrei Torah on Shabbos. However, he wrote them using Da'al Yedei Hashem V'Hashbos Kumas. He used the Shem HaMafirash. And since he spoke, by evoking the Shem HaMafirash, that wasn't considered to be Ksiva on Shabbos, and therefore was permitted. So perhaps you see from here that if a person speaks by using the Shem HaMafirash, so then that is not considered to be a Malacha on Shabbos, and thereby accomplishes a certain, physical activity, or a certain creative activity, that should not necessarily be considered a malacha on Shabbos and would be permitted. Similarly, the Gemara tells us over here, Masechta Sanhedrin, and of Kofal from the Aleph, Loichashin Lechishash Nechashim Vakravim B'Shabbos. One is allowed to paralyze animals with an incantation on Shabbos. Dangerous animals, for those who are scared of bugs. It's a good advice. If you have an incantation ready and handy, you can use it to paralyze the insect or the animal so that it should not harm you. Rashi there explains, how are you accomplishing this? I'm sorry, why are you doing this? So it shouldn't harm you. That's not considered to be the malach of trapping on Shabbos. It's permitted. Why should it be permitted? Again, because you're using some sort of incantation, presumably related to some aspect of the Shem HaMafirash, a Sefer Yetzira type idea, and therefore it's permitted on Shabbos. So if you accomplish this kind of activity on Shabbos, this kind of result, using your speech, that seems to be permitted. Achronim from about 200 years ago, one of the Achronim writes in his Sefer Geze Yishai, based on this comment of Rashi, that one would be permitted to create Garlam, to create a human being using Sefer Yetzirah on Shabbos, because he's speaking, and even though it's bringing about a change, it seems to be permitted on Shabbos based on the precedent of this Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin. Additionally, the Gemara tells us in Masechta Yuma that one of the garments the Kohen Gadol wore, we read about it a few weeks ago, was the Choshen. It was the breastplate. Inside the Choshen were 12 were stones corresponding to each one of the Shvatim. And the name of the Shevet was written on the stone. The letters. There were additional things written on the stones as well on the Choshen. It said Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Why? So the Gemara explains, because in all the letters of the names of the Shvatim, there's no Tzadi. So if a Kodesh Baruch Hu had to communicate a message, you'd have to have a Tzadi there, so it was Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. There's also no Tess. So it also said Shivtei Yeshurun, and that added the Tess. Why was it necessary to have all the letters of the Aleph Beis? Because contained within the Choshen was also the Urim V'Tumim. Shem HaMafarish of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the king, if he had any question about how he should conduct himself, would go and seek the advice of the Urim V'Tumim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu would respond through the letters that were inscribed, engraved upon these stones of the Choshen. And this was called the Urim V'Tumim. Why was it called Urim V'Tumim? The Gemara explains, because it provided the king with guidance, and it was Tam. It was complete guidance. There were no further questions he had to ask. This was the complete and perfect answer. But how did it work? So the Gemara explains at the end of the first line, Ketzad Nasis, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Boltois, Reish Lakish Amar Mitzdarfos. According to Reish Lakish, what happened was the answer, the letters of the answer would protrude. I mean, they would like stick out a little. But they would be out of order. They would stay in their place. So it was like an anagram. The king had to decipher what the message was by rearranging the letters. It was, you know, it was a code, a cryptic. According to Reish Lakish, no, it was entirely clear. Mitzdarfos, the letters would miraculously rearrange themselves on the Choshen. And the answer would be clear to the king. Oh, so the Acharinim ask, 1 minute. So every time the king would ask a question, and the Gemara says himself, this Erev and David asked the Urva Tumim questions on Shabbos. So when he would ask a question on Shabbos, what would happen? The letters would rearrange themselves. He just violated Kosef. He's creating a new text that didn't exist beforehand. So again, over here, the Acharinim conclude, must be that when a person is accomplishing this through his speech, and he's tapping into the Shem HaMafirash to ask a question of the Urim V'tumim, that must be permitted on Shabbos. And it's not considered to be a Malecha Shabbos. Even beyond the arena of Shabbos, in the Truvas Halochas Kitanis, that's from Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz, who's a Sephardish Achron who lived in Morocco in the 1600s. So he has a very important question, which he answers, you know, really tersely. I didn't edit this out. He only has one line answer. He says, Shela, ha-horeg nefesh al yidei shem o kishuf mahu. He wants to kill somebody else for whatever reason with the shem ha-mafayrash. Is it permitted? I would think this would be a long dissertation, you know. It's a heavy issue. He answers it in one line. Tshuva, efshad dekeven de bedivura avid maisa, since your words are accomplishing, you know, a result. Havale dumya kizare chetz lahargos, no different than a person who shoots an arrow at somebody else. Valgayam nemar, and about this the pasuk says in Sefer Tehillim, chetz shachut l'shoinam. They killed somebody, you know, with the arrow of their tongue. How do you do that? With the Shem HaMafarsh, and he claims that that should be an iser of ritzicha. Certainly then it might be relevant on Shabbos. However, many Achronim disagree with this comment of Lochas Ketanis. They have a raya, they have a proof from the Rambam, which is quite compelling. The Rambam writes over here, Perakei of Choyvu Umazik, that a Nachri who strikes a Yisrael is Chayiv Misa. How do we know? What's the source for this? A Nachri who strikes a Yisrael is Chayiv Misa. So the Gemara says, even if he causes minimal damage, it's Chayiv Misa. So the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin derives this from Moshe Rabbeinu. If you remember back to Parsha Shmos, what happened? Moshe Rabbeinu sees an Egyptian striking a Yisrael. What does he do? He intervenes. Vayif and Koy Vachoy. Vayar ki einish, he turns to the right and to the left, he sees no one else is there. Vayachas ha-mitzri vayet meneu b'chol. He hits the mitzri and he buries him in the sand. So what did Moshe Rabbeinu do? He killed him. So you see that a nachri who strikes the Yisrael is chayav misa, because that's how Moshe Rabbeinu reacted. And that's how the Rambam quotes the halacha in Perakei of Chayav Omazag or Chagimo, goy shehikas Yisrael chayav misa, shenamar, as the pasuk says in Sefer Shemais, vayifen, and Parsha Shmais, Vayifen, Koy Vachoy, Vayach Semitzri. Okay? The problem is, the Rambam, all the way at the end of the Mishnah Torah, and Parakeh of Hilchus Malacha, Malacha Vav, quotes this halacha again, but somewhat differently. The Rambam says, Akum Shehika Yisrael, Afilu Chavabo Koshu, Anachri strikes Yisrael, even if he caused minimal damage, Chayiv Misa. He's deserving a capital punishment, but Einoy Neharag. He's not put to death. We don't act on it. It's not actionable. 1 minute. Where's the precedent for this halacha? From Moshe Rabbeinu and his interaction with the Mitzri. What did Moshe Rabbeinu do? He killed him. So how could the Rambam derive the whole precedent from Moshe Rabbeinu who killed the Mitzri? And over here the Rambam says that a Nachri who strikes the Yisrael's Kai Misa, but ain't no Nerag. He's deserving of capital punishment, but it's not actionable. But Moshe Rabbeinu acted based upon it. And that's the entire precedent for this halacha. This was a question that Soloveitchik asked his father in a letter. It was later printed in a sefer called Igros Hagrid. So in that letter, which I believe he wrote when he was younger, obviously. But his father responds, following answer. His father said, no, because the pasuk tells us that when Moshe Rabbeinu intervened in the second dispute, when he saw two Jews fighting, Shnei Anoshim Nitzim, who Rashi tells us was Dasan and Aviram, so Moshe Rabbeinu intervenes. And this time, Dothan and Aviram say to Moshe, "Halahargeinu ata oimer kasher haraktas haMitzri? Are you going to kill us with your speech the same way you killed the Mitzri?" So Rashi, their comments, how did Moshe Rabbeinu kill the Mitzri? He killed him. It's two opinions in the Medrash. But one opinion of the Medrash is he killed him with the Shem HaMafayrash. So Sarah Moshe Salavajic, he killed him with the Shem HaMafayrash. So what do you see? From according to the Rambam, killing with the Shem HaMafayrash is not considered to be Ritzicha. And that's why the Rambam says, Anachlu Yishraksi Yisrael Chayv Misa B'Neinu Nerag. Moshe Rabbeinu killed the Mitzvah. He killed him with the Shem HaMafayrash. That's not considered to be Ritzicha. Moshe Salavajic says, of course, it's wrong for other reasons. You shouldn't go around striking, cursing people with the Kishuf and Shem HaMafayrash. But it's not the formal prohibition of Ritzicha. And therefore, the Rambam says, an Akam who strikes the Yisrael is Chayv Misa, but it's not actionable, even though Moshe Rabbeinu did act upon it. He only killed him with the Shem HaMafayrash. But what do we see from here? That an action that's accomplished by using, bringing about a certain result through speech and evoking the Shem HaMafayrash is not considered to be, you know, an act of Ritzicha, which is consistent with everything else that we saw, that it shouldn't be an act of Chilul Shabbos either. If I use speech, I evoke the Shem HaMafayrash to accomplish, to bring about a certain result. However, this all perhaps is not necessarily analogous to our situation. Rav Asher Weiss, who has a tshuva about a voice recognition technology, it's not printed in his Sfarim, but he puts out a Dvar Torah every week on the Parashos, on Tavshin Ayin Hei, and the parasha, comments on Parashas Vayakel. I think he later printed it in a journal called Tevuna. But he addresses this issue and he quotes the sources that we cited a few moments ago. And he says that's not relevant to our discussion. This has nothing to do with voice recognition technology. That's if I'm doing something using supernatural means. That's considered to be a Kadosh Baruch Hu's actions. I am using the Shem HaMafayrash. But the Maisa, of course, it's up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Is he going to bring about this result, or is he not going to bring about this result? So it's all up to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And if a Kadosh Baruch Hu does bring it about, then this is attributed to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's not attributed to me at all. This is up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But if a person has appliances or technology, it was created and fashioned by human beings, that's no different than any other utensil or piece of equipment in the hands of a farmer or any other type of laborer. This is considered to be kakli b'yada yoytzer, like an instrument, like a piece of equipment that we use to accomplish many tasks. And of course, that would relate to me. That would be my action. For example, a person pushes a button on a car and the car turns on. The ignition. So there's fire in the ignition. So that's considered to be a malach of havara, without a doubt. That's my action. I have a machine that I arranged in such a fashion that I push a button and it turns on. So of course, that's considered to be my action. So too, argues Rav Asher Weiss, is a davar pashut. He doesn't even quote any supporting sources. That if I created this technology, it's no different than a person, let's say, who creates a weapon. He pushes down on a button and a bullet fires out. Of course, that's considered to be his action, even though he didn't throw the bullet. He created a utensil through which it takes place. Or a person has an oven. He presses a button on the oven. A fire turns on. Clearly, that's your action. It's Melech HaShabbos. We don't even need a raya to prove that. So too says Rav Asher Weiss, that over here I created this technology to accomplish this task. So that's, of course, considered to be my action, and it would involve a Melech HaShabbos if it accomplished, brought about some creative act. However, there are sources, even though he says it's a Dover Pasht, it's slightly different than a person who presses a button on a car, which he does with an action, or a person who presses a button on an oven, which he does with a physical action. You initiate it, you triggered it with a physical action. Here, what triggers it is your voice. It's not really exactly the same, but I believe that there are, in fact, supporting sources that would lead us to that conclusion, that they should be treated in the same manner. The Gemara tells us, over here, Ois Yud, the 10th source on the sheet, with regards to a prohibition in the Parashas Kisetze, the Torah tells us when an animal is working in the field, lo sachsam shar b'dishoy, you're not allowed to muzzle the animal as it's working. You have to let it eat. And this is a model of a lo sese. In the Torah, this is like, you know, the typical garden variety lo sese. And in the fact that it's juxtaposed, it's adjacent in Parashas Kisetze, the previous pasuk is the pasuk of Malkus, of Arboim Yakenu. that when a person violates the law, says in the Torah, he's supposed to receive malchus. So from here, the Gemara derives from this juxtaposition of l'safsum sharpetishai next to the giving malchus, that a person only receives malchus if he violates a prohibition in the Torah that's similar, that's dumya delav de chasima. This is the model for which you receive malchus. What's unique about it? The Gemara says, just like the lav de chasima is a lav sheyesh by maisa, it involves, you know, an act of muzzling the animal, so too a person only receives malchus for violating a lav that involves an action. So the mashal, let's say we have lashon hara. Sefer Chafetz Chaim, Marshall's, you know, brings many sources. You violate many surim for speaking lashon hara. Say rachel ba'men, many. So do you receive malchus for speaking lashon hara? Baruch Hashem, you do not. There's no malchus for speaking lashon hara. Why not? Because the lav she ain boy ma'isa. There's no action that's associated with it. You speak, but that's it. There's no physical action associated with it, so there's no malchus. However, the Gemara Maseches Bar Metzia has the following question: what about chasma b'kol? I don't muzzle the animal physically, but I intimidate the animal from eating. I yell at the animal. And therefore, when it's working, it's too scared to eat. So Rabbi Yochanan Omar Chayev. Chasma b'kol v'nhigo b'kol, Rabbi Yochanan Omar Chayev. Reish Lakish disagrees that you're potter because he didn't do an action. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, but you intimidated it. So Rabbi Yochanan Omar Chayev, not only you violated Sashim B'disho, but you receive malchus. Why? You need an act in order to receive malchus. So the Gemara says at the end of the first line, Akimas piv havi maisa. Moving your lips is considered to be a sufficient maitza, which would warrant malchus. So Frek Taisa Kasha, Taisa then asks, 1 minute, if moving lips is considered to be an act that rises to the level of a lav sheyesh bo maisa, how come when I speak Lashon Hara, there's no malchus? It's a lav sheyesh. I didn't do a maisa. I did. I spoke. Akimas piv is having maisa. So Tosis there resolves the following notion. Tosis says, yo, lo ka omar Rabbi Yochanan, akimas piv having maisa. Moving your lips is not considered to be a maisa. Only here where it brings about a physical change. Only here. What's going to happen? The animal before was grazing. Then I scolded it. I intimidated it. Now it's not grazing anymore. Now it's not eating as it's working. So my speech brought about a physical change. Since my speech brought about a physical change, so that elevates the movement of my lips to be the trigger of that action. That's considered to be a lav sheyesh bo ma'isa, and a person would receive malchus. So what do you see from here? Perhaps you see from here that when my speech brings about a physical change, then that is the equivalent of pushing a button on a car or pushing a button on an oven. That's considered to be my action. I created here, a piece of technology which uses my speech to accomplish a certain physical change. It's going to order stuff for me from the store. It's going to turn on my light, turn off my light, or accomplish some other change. So whenever there's a physical change that's brought about through my speech, so then, as Tosis told us in Maseches Bo Metzia, that's considered to be your action. It would warrant malchus, a lav sheyesh bo ma'isa, and therefore certainly would rise to the level of being Maleches Shabbos. And it's not just Tosis holds like this, many other, the Rambam perhaps also holds like this, and seems to be the way that we paskin. Another Gemara, which seems to give a similar indication, is the Gemara says over here in the 11th source, Tarnigol shehoshet rosho la'avir klei zechuchis, a chicken sticks its head near a glass utensil. And because it shrieks, and because of the sound waves that it emits, it shatters the glass. So in law of damages, I'm responsible not only if my actions directly cause damage, but even if my property directly causes damage, my chicken would cause damage, I'm obligated to pay for that damage. Only if it's direct. If it's indirect, if it's grama bin azikin, then I'm not obligated to pay. I'm only it's wrong. But it's not. I'm not obligated to pay midina yadam. Only obligated to pay if it's a direct act. So here the Gemara says, if my chicken emits sound waves which cause your glass utensil to break, that's considered to be a direct action, direct damage, and I'm obligated to pay. So the Maril, which is later on quoted by the Rama and Shulchan Aruch in an entirely different context, derives from here a fascinating halacha. As you know, we're not allowed to eat even if the food is all kosher, you're not allowed to eat bread that was baked by a non-Jew or food that was cooked by a non-Jew. Pasakum, as bishalakum. We eat bread that's prepared by companies and it's considered to be paspalter. There's no. The whole fear of pasakums, might lead to intermarriage if we're socializing over the same food. But if it's baked by a palter, it's baked by a bakery or a company, there's no fear that that's necessarily going to lead to socializing because we don't know the person who's baking it personally, and therefore it's permitted. That's what we rely on throughout much of the year with regards to palth. There's no similar heter with regards to bishol. Bishol, it has to be prepared specifically by a Jew. A Jew has to be involved in the cooking of the food. By palth, we have a heter of pas palter. It was a lesser gzera, less intense gzera than bishol akum. But the pasta we eat, generally speaking, the pasta we eat is supposed to be pas Yisrael. The Jew has to be involved in the baking of the bread, and Jew has to be involved in the cooking of prepared food. What's called involved, he actually doesn't have to bake the bread or cook the food. Even if he just turns on the fire, that's sufficient. He has to be involved somewhat. If the guy turns on the fire, if he prepares the food, that's sufficient. Even if he has a minimal involvement, he stirs the pot. It's also considered to be Bishul Yisrael. Any involvement of the Yisrael somewhere along the way labels it as Pas Yisrael or Bishul Yisrael, even if the Jew just lights the fire. The Rama takes this even further. Even if a Jew lights a fire from a fire, even if the non-Jew lights the fire he's going to cook on from a fire that was lit by a Jew, the pilot light heter. It's also enough. If the Jew lit the pilot light, later on the Nachri comes and he lights a fire from that fire, that's also sufficient. Even more than that, the Shulchan Aruch, at least by Pas Yisrael, again, which is a less exer of the Ramah, is the Ashkenazim are making with this, even with regards to Bishul Yisrael, even if the Yisrael just throws a piece of fuel, a branch, a twig into the fire, that's considered to be Bishul Yisrael. That's enough. He didn't light the fire, he didn't put the food there, he didn't prepare the food. All he did was throw a little bit of fuel into the fire. That's enough. That's by Pas Yisrael, Ashkenazim and Mekel, even by Bishul Yisrael. But the Rama writes in Hilchos Pas Akum, over here in the 12th source, at the end of the second line, Vim Nafach Be'esh Havi Kechitoi. If the Jew even blows on the fire, that's sufficient. And this is based on a comment of the Ma'aril, who bases himself on that Gemara Mesechus Bava Kama that we just saw. If the sound waves are emitted by the chicken are considered to be his direct act, and his chayiv, he's liable for the damages that he causes, so then even blowing on the fire should be considered to be a sufficient act that will relate to the Jew, and therefore would be considered Bishul Yisrael. What about if I trigger the flame even with sound? There's a rav in Lakewood. It's a big problem in the kashrus industry. Giving hashgachas in the metropolitan area is a little bit easier because the mashgichim live nearby. But if you, let's say, giving hashgachas in some more remote location, so, of course, if there's, meat there and you need a mashkiach tmidi, there's nothing really to speak of. But what if you have a mashkiach, many plants where there isn't too much to worry about that they're going to, that could go wrong, they rely on a yoytze v'nichnas. He comes and goes. Many milchik restaurants rely on that as well. Now they demand usually a video camera just as a backup. But a video camera with a mashkiach who's yoytze v'nichnas. He comes and goes. So he travels in, intermittently to surprise them. And check on the facility. But if they're cooking or baking something, so you can have a problem. Every morning, if the Nachri turns on the flame, it'll be Pas Akum or it'll be Bishul Akum, which is a bigger problem. So how do you avoid that? Specifically, if you want Pas Yisrael, how can that be avoided? So it's a big hurdle in the kashrus industry if you need a Jew to light the fire in the morning. So Rav from Lakewood, named Rav Yehuda Shane, came up with a technology years ago that he could turn on an oven with his phone. He watches it on the video camera, and he presses a button on his phone, and he sees that the oven turns on. So the OU, in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Vosner, Rav Yashav, accepted that should be considered Bishol Yisrael and Pas Yisrael. Now, the kashrus organizations are not as excited about it for other reasons, practical reasons, not fundamental reasons, I don't think. But they consider that to be Bishul. You're still pressing a button on your phone is also Bishul or Pas Yisrael. So one could argue that, based on the source that we're saying, so really, even if you don't have to press a button on a phone, you speak, I say, Siri, turn on the oven. So that should also be considered to be Bishul Yisrael. But just moving back to Hilchos Shabbos, so then it seems to support Rav Asher Weiss's conclusion, his intuitive response, that if I create a technology, the Amazon Echo, whatever. I have three Amazon Alexas, and my wife loves these things. Everywhere you go, with the video. So if you speak to Alexa, it accomplishes a certain task, it buys something for you, it turns on the light for you, it brings about a physical change. So whenever your actions bring about a physical result, you know, a physical change that's visible, that's considered to be your action, and you'd be, it would be Bishul Yisrael and Pas Yisrael, could go to Kula as well. But when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, that would be considered your action, and would be Melechus Shabbos. Aside from this issue, once we're going to say that when I speak, you know, that causes, if it causes a physical change, that's my action. So not only am I not allowed to speak and cause that physical change, even just to say those words itself is prohibited. Look at the top of the sheet, we have to mention this. Is the Gemara Masechet Shabbos quoting the pasuk in Sefer Yeshayahu v'chibadato me'asos derachecha so chafetzecha v'daber davar? How do we honor Shabbos? We honor Shabbos by not engaging in the activities we engage in during the week. We have different clothes for Shabbos. We don't run on Shabbos. We walk. And so too, the Gemara says shlo yehei diburcha b'Shabbos ki diburcha b'chol. You shouldn't speak on Shabbos the way that you speak during the week. So the Shulchan Aruch says, this is a real halacha, it's not just like a nice idea. Shulchan Aruch says in Shin Zayin Sif Aleph, it's not like because it's not Shabbos day, it's really prohibited. Shulchan Aruch says, you're not allowed to mention a malacha on Shabbos. Let's say I say, I cannot say I plan to drive to my parents' house after Shabbos, because you're mentioning a malacha. You're not allowed to speak about a malacha at all under any context. You can say I plan to go, maybe I'll walk. Even if they live in California, maybe I will take a long walk. Maybe they live in Israel. Maybe I'll take a boat. You didn't necessarily speak about a malacha. You can be merames. The Gemara says, I could say to workers, stick around, Motzei Shabbos. You never know what might happen. There might be something interesting for you. You can say that, but you can't mention the words of a malacha. You can't say, I plan to buy, I plan to sew, I plan to write. You're not allowed to say that on Shabbos. You're mentioning a malacha. That's one of the reasons that Chazal prohibited us from asking a Nachri to do a malacha for us on Shabbos. Amir Lanachri, I can't ask a Nachri to turn on the light because I might come to turn it on myself. That's one reason. The other reason is because I can't say the words, Pashut, I cannot say, turn on the light. Shalo yedi burcha b'Shabbos, yedi burcha b'chol. You can't mention a malacha on Shabbos. So too over here, even just to speak to Alexa, to say, don't turn on, you know, Alexa, turn on the light, I happen to think it's my action. But in addition to that, you can't even say the words, Alexa, turn on the light. That itself would be a violation of V'dabar Dabar. But even if one will argue that it's more indirect, yeah, it's not really the same as the sound waves causing the damage, or the other example that we had, which was, I intimidate the animal, and that directly, you know, my speech, causes the animal to scare to eat. Here's a little bit more indirect. I'm speaking to the Amazon, and then it accomplishes the thing. I happen to think it is direct. It is your action. But even if it wouldn't be as direct, the Gemara tells us in Masechtas Bava Kamma, even if one would argue that it's more of a grumma, it's more indirect, the Gemara says in Masechtas Bava Kamma, if one lights a fire over here, I got a fire, and the fire itself inherently is innocuous, but a wind comes and blows the fire and it causes damage to someone else's property. So Gemara says that's indirect, and you're pater. You're not obligated to pay. Midine Shamayim is the right thing to make up the loss. I lit the fire, and it caused a lot of damage. But if I lit a fire here, it was innocuous. A wind came, afterwards, and blew the fire somewhere else. It's a grumma benezikin. It's indirect, and I'm not obligated to pay. But the Gemara says on Shabbos, if I have a mixture of kernels of grain together with the shell, with the husk is lighter than the kernels of grain. So you want to separate between the two. I throw it up into the air. The wind comes, blows the chaff, which is lighter, and the kernels of grain drop to the floor, and I thereby separate it between the kernels of grain and the husk. I sorted a mixture. So Gemara says, you're chayiv for borer, or the equivalent here of the malacha of zoreh. Why? I did something which is innocuous. I threw it up in the air. Nothing wrong with that. And a wind came and took over and did the rest. How is that different than lighting a fire over here? And the wind takes it and it causes it to do damage. That there it's grumma benezikin, it's indirect. Over here on Shabbos, we're considering that to be malacha which is prohibited. So the Gemara says in the second line, Hani mili inyan Shabbos, the malechas machsheves asur Torah. The pasuk says in this week's parashah, parashas Vayakel, that the Mishkan was malechas machsheves, thoughtful malacha. So to on Shabbos, the malacha has to be thoughtful. Usually, that means that indicates that a person has to have in mind the malacha that he wants to accomplish. if I do an activity and malacha comes about as a result, but that wasn't what I intended to do, so that leads to certain kulas and leniencies. Because I didn't intend to do this, it wasn't a thoughtful act, and therefore it's permitted. Here the Gemara swings the door, the pendulum, the other way. That if I accomplish what I intended to accomplish, even if what I did was indirect, but the desired result came about, Malechas, Machsheves, Asur Torah, even though my action was indirect, it's still prohibited on Shabbos. So Rashi writes, so that's exactly what I was trying to accomplish. So even if one would argue here is a little bit more indirect, I happen to think it is direct, and so does many others, but even if it would be indirect, over here you're accomplishing what you set out to accomplish, Malechas, Machsheves, Asur Torah. So that's if your speech brings about a physical change, you know, the lights turn on, you ordered something, or whatever other activity you commanded the Alexa to perform, that would be your act, and it could be a malacha on Shabbos. What about, though, and the minute you say Alexa, if you have one of these things, you know that it glows blue. So already, you know, just like we wouldn't turn on an electrical device that glows blue, you can't press a button to make an electrical device glow blue for whatever reason, we're not discussing that now, but you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do that with your voice either. But what if one would come up with a device that doesn't glow blue? Let's say some Jewish, you know, pioneer would want to create a new technology just for Shabbos where nothing happens when I speak to the Alexa. I see no change. And all I want to do is speak to Alexa. The guy's lonely on Shabbos or something. He wants to know, you know, what's the weather outside. He wants Alexa to speak back to him. He's not asking Alexa to order anything or turn on any lights. Oh, you know, when's Abraham Lincoln's birthday? I know, just various pieces of information that's what Alexa is usually used for. So I want to do that on Shabbos. So really nothing's happening other than the fact that Alexa is speaking back. Now, again, that's not the way Alexa functions. Someone told me Google Home doesn't turn on, no lights turn on, but I don't know, I don't have one of those. But all of ours, the minute you say something, something changes to show you that it's listening to you now. And it's at your beck and call. So, but otherwise, you know, there's always a change. But if Lu Yitzur, someone would create such a thing, that no change would take place, all it's going to do is speak back to me, would that be permitted on Shabbos? So Paiskim, to compare this to the discussion that was had by the Paiskim about 50, 60 years ago regarding microphones on Shabbos, where people discuss the issue about if I leave a microphone on before Shabbos, and I'll speak into the microphone, and we'll create an electronically generated sound. Most people misunderstand microphones. Microphones don't amplify your voice. Microphones take the sound noise and create an electronically generated sound. That's why it's no good for Mikra Megillah or for Tkiyah Shofar or for hearing brachas. You're not hearing the person's voice amplified. It's an entirely different voice, an electronically created voice, which mimics the voice that went in, but it's not the same thing. Okay, so the person allowed to speak, the microphone was turned on before Shabbos. You're allowed to speak into the microphone, which is going to produce an electronically created sound on Shabbos. So Ramesh was opposed to it because he felt there was some Iser involved in creating an electronically created sound. However, Ramesh's understanding of electricity was not as, you know, on par with Shlomo Zalman. Shlomo Zalman, who was afterwards and had the benefit of that, but also spent a lot of time researching electricity, Shlomo Zalman claims that there was no malacha inherently involved in creating an electronically, you know, generated sound on Shabbos. If you didn't turn on the microphone, there's no additional Iser by causing, you know, using more electricity or less electricity when there's no visible change. I don't see anything. It's creating a sound. Rav Shlomo Zalman didn't think that was called using electricity that would be prohibited. But Rav Shlomo Zalman had another problem with the page over here in the source Yud Ches. So Gemara says that one is allowed to begin a malacha Erev Shabbos leading into Shabbos. For example, continues on to Shabbos. A person lights a candle before Shabbos, the candle continues to burn into Shabbos. That's permitted. Because even though I have to rest on Shabbos, my utensils don't have to rest on Shabbos. So I can have my candle burning on Shabbos. However, the Gemara says, or I could leave my air conditioner running going into Shabbos. However, the Gemara says that I'm not allowed to begin a malacha before Shabbos that continues on to Shabbos even though I'm not doing anything if it makes a loud noise. The Gemara there is discussing a mill that's grinding wheat. So it's going to make a lot of noise when it's grinding the wheat. So the Gemara says, even if I set it up before Shabbos, put all the wheat in, I set it going, it's going to continue on to Shabbos. That's prohibited. So the Gemara says, Mipnei Shemashmas Ko. It makes a noise. So Rashi there explains, Mipnei Shemashmas Ko, Va'av Shemilsa B'Shabbos V'Ika Zilusa. it makes a loud noise, and there's some, you know, it's inappropriate to Shabbos to do that. There's a zilusha. It's embarrassing. What's the problem? So the Rishonim explain, because people are going to hear this, it's going to create a commotion, it's going to draw attention to itself, and people are going to suspect that I initiated this malacha on Shabbos. People are going to see my mill going and say, oh, Stein's violating Shabbos. He turned it on Shabbos morning. So it's going to draw attention to itself, and people will accuse me of violating Shabbos. I brought that kind of doubt upon myself. So for that reason, and that's the way we paskin, over here, Oisir test, the Ramah quotes this halacha, you're not allowed to begin a malacha before Shabbos. It continues on to Shabbos, even though you're entirely passive if it makes noise and draws attention to itself. So for that reason, Shlomo Zalman, Rabbi Avadia held, one is not allowed to, let's say, set a washing machine before Shabbos and allow it to continue on to Shabbos. So I put my dryer up before Shabbos. And I wanted to dry the clothes and continue on to Shabbos. I'm not even going to use it on Shabbos. I just want to, you know, most dryers, when you open them, it turns on a light. I'll wait till after Shabbos to use it. But I want it to be dry once it's Shabbos. So you're not allowed to do that because most dryers and washing machines make noise. They draw attention to themselves. And therefore, people might suspect that I turned it on Shabbos. Or Moshe has a truth also about alarm clocks. I want to set an alarm clock to wake up for shul. So Moshe says, if you can hear it only in your room, that's not called creating a commotion, or in your house. So then that's not called creating a commotion. No one's going to suspect you of anything. They can't hear it. But if it's a person's dryer is on the whole block, you know, if you walk by the house, you can smell it. Or you can hear it. But an alarm clock, so Moshe says, if you can hear it also beyond your house, some, you know, it's like there to be wake up the dead, some of these alarm clocks, you can hear it. Or if you're in closer quarters, you can hear from one apartment to the next apartment, or Moshe lived in an apartment, so then you can hear it next door, so then that draws attention to itself, and people are going to accuse me of setting my alarm clock on Shabbos. What about then? Then Paiskim also discussed a dishwasher. You can't run a dishwasher before Shabbos, continuing on to Shabbos, because dishwashers in the olden times made a lot of noise. Now, I think dishwashers, if you have a newer dishwasher, they really don't make a lot of noise. You can barely tell these things are on. So that you could probably set before Shabbos, you know, going into Shabbos. There's no way you could set a dishwasher on a timer to go on Shabbos morning. Because, or to go on after the meal Friday night and use the dishes Shabbos morning. Because the minute you close the dishwasher door, it triggers the dishwasher. That's like the on-off switch. It won't turn on if the door is open. It'll flood your house. So the minute you close it, you're triggering the dishwasher. So even if you put it on a timer, if you wouldn't have closed the door, it wouldn't turn on. So you can't do that. But if you left it before Shabbos, let's say I'm cooking Erev Shabbos and I want the dishes to be dry, you know, later on, so that I can do, I can set it going into Shabbos because it's so quiet. What about air conditioners, though? Air conditioners typically make a lot of noise. So that's different because everybody leaves those on all the time. If you leave it on all the time, so there isn't a fear of people suspecting that you turned it on Shabbos because it's always on. And this is based on a comment of the Ramah. The Ramah writes over here in the 19th source, over here, Oisir Tes. He says a person is allowed to have Mutar Lahamid Klei Mishkolo Shekorim Zeger. Mayor of Shabbos. You're allowed to have a grandfather clock that chimes every hour because even though it draws attention to itself, you could hear it outside of the house maybe, but everybody knows you leave these things running all the time and no one's going to suspect that I turned it on Shabbos. So too the air conditioner, even if you have a refrigerator that makes a loud noise, everyone knows you leave these things on all the time, no one's going to suspect that you turned it on Shabbos. Alarm clocks, or much as people typically set the night before. Shlomo Zalman said, I don't understand this truth from Shlomo Zalman. He says, no, most people leave the alarm clock set from day to day to day. I don't think that's true. I think most people turn it off when they wake up in the morning and set it again, because sometimes they wake up different times and set it the night before. So Moshe says, then, if people set it the night before, I hear an alarm clock Shabbos morning, I might suspect that you set it Friday night. So too, argues the Shlomo Zalman over here, Oishchaf in the Chuvas Mincha Shlomo, that's why you can't use a microphone on Shabbos, even if it was set up before Shabbos. He doesn't have a problem generating the electric sound on Shabbos. He's just using more electricity, less electricity, but it's already on before. But rather, Shlomo Zalman has a problem because most people turn on a microphone when? Right before they're about to use it. You don't leave a microphone on all the time. So you turn on right before you use it. So even though here we set it up before Shabbos, but you can hear it. The whole purpose of the microphone is to be able to be heard, you know, beyond your Dalaramas. So since you're setting up a system, by when you set up before Shabbos, but it's going to draw attention to itself, people are going to suspect that I turned it on Shabbos morning or I turned it on Shabbos. And that would be prohibited, no different than the mill that's grinding grain that makes a lot of noise, that draws attention to itself. People might think, I turned it on Shabbos. That's why hearing aids are very different. Hearing aids, only the person themselves can hear it. That's not mashmas kol. There's no great attention that it draws. That's why hearing aids are permitted, as opposed to microphone, or even if I leave a radio on Shabbos. People are going to hear it. I've turned it on before, but now people are going to hear it. They're going to think, most people don't leave their radio on all the time, so they're going to think I turned it on Shabbos. That's no different than the mill that grinds the grain. However, over here, one could argue, I speak to the Alexa, it makes a noise. Perhaps it's audible beyond my kitchen. If I said it very low, you wouldn't have this problem, but perhaps it's going to be audible throughout the house. My Alexa speaks throughout the house, if you hear it. So then, it draws attention to itself. Yeah. That's some of our, I think the Alexa, most people leave on all the time. So if you leave it on all the time, it's not like the microphone. The microphone, you typically turn it on right before you use it. Here, Alexa, these voice recognition devices, you leave on all the time. That's the whole purpose. You want an Eved, waiting to do what you want whenever you want it, So that's the whole purpose. I don't think anybody would suspect that you turned it on right before. So I don't know if that concern of the microphone would be applicable. However, Ramesh and his discussion of microphones raises a separate issue. Aside from the electronically created sound and the issue that Shlomo Zalman raises, he raises a second issue, which is relevant, to the Alexa. The Shulchan Aruch says over here, in Ois Chaf Aleph, that one is not allowed to use a musical instrument on Shabbos. It's based on the Mishnah Maseches Beah and Dav Lamed Vav Mabez. You're not allowed to play musical instruments on Shabbos or even clap your hands in the normal way. Why? Because Gzeira Shema Yisakin Klei Shir. It might break, the banjo might break, and I might come to fix it on Shabbos. So you say, well, I don't know how to fix utensils, instruments that break on Shabbos. Doesn't matter. Even if I don't know how to fix it, if it breaks, it's still prohibited. Because once Chazal make a gzeira, even if the reason no longer applies, the gzeira continues to apply. So even though we don't fix these things, we don't know how to fix them, it doesn't matter. Chazal prohibited us from playing musical instruments. Not only... The Mishnah says musical instruments. The Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rishonim that derive from here. Look over here, Oiskaf Aleph. Hashmas ko b'klei shir aser. Even if I use an instrument, not to play a musical noise. I want to get your attention, so I bang a stick on a drum. You can't do that. That's using a musical instrument, and if it breaks, I might come to fix it. What if it's not a musical instrument? It's some other utensil, not musically oriented, this shtender. So, avalahakish ala deles v'chayotzeba, or a door. If I knock, I want to come into your house. That's permitted. If I start playing, the Star Spangled Banner on your door, no, that's derech shir, that's prohibited. You have sometimes people sit at Zmiris at the Shabbos table, and the guy's, using the table or a set of glasses as, drums. That's banging on the table, derech shir, that's prohibited, even if it's not an instrument. What can you do? If you want to get people's attention, you could use it's a little aristocratic for me, but to use a knife to tap the glass, that's permitted. We typically yell at people, that's the Jewish way, but if you tap the knife on the glass, it's permitted because this is not a musical item, and I'm not using it for musical sounds. But if I decide to use my table or a door for musical sounds, it's prohibited even if it's not an instrument. Not only that, the Rama goes so far as to say that not only, but if it's not a musical instrument, then it's permitted if it's a normal sound. I knock on the door. What if I have something in between? It's an instrument that's made to make sound, but it's not a musical instrument. What do you have that? So the Rama discusses the door knocker. It's meant to make sound, but it's not a musical instrument per se. It's not made for music. The Rama says that's also included in the Gzeira. The Rama says, also the hakos b'shabes haladeles b'tabas hakvua b'deles afal p'sheinu mechavim l'shir. Even though you don't have intention for sound, for music, it's still prohibited. You can't use the door knocker on Shabbos. You have to knock with your hand. So moving back, it's all included in the Gzeira Shema Yisakan Klei Shir, a play musical instrument. So too argues Ramesha over here, Oischa Beis, that the microphone as well, even if you set it up before Shabbos, to use it on Shabbos, the microphone is at least a utensil that's made to make noise. It might even be, in my opinion, and the opinion of others, it might even be a musical utensil because it's typically used for music too. People use microphones for musical purposes. So, but even if it's not made as a musical instrument, according to me, then it might be a problem during the 3 weeks to listen to anything on the microphone. But I'm not ready to go that far. But clearly, you know, maybe over here in this context, at least we could differentiate between the two. Here, it definitely is made to you, you know, made for making noise, maybe even specifically for music. So therefore, Ramesha argues that that's why it's prohibited to use a microphone. An additional reason why it's prohibited to use a microphone on Shabbos, it's no different than any kind of using a clay shear, any instrument that's used to make noise, any utensil that's made for making noise, and therefore be prohibited on Shabbos. So too, this Alexa is made to make noise. That's the whole purpose of Alexa, is to there to talk back to you and make you, you know, feel like you have company. So it'll even say good morning to you if you program it for this. You know, so it's made to make noise. I would think it's even, perhaps, we could toy with the idea, it's even a musical instrument, because most, you know, Alexas are tied into some music account. So they play music and videos as well. So that might even be a musical instrument. But even if it's not, it's certainly made to make noise, and therefore would be included in this gezeira. And even if I would trigger it without any action at all, let's say I would program it to tell me the weather and, you know, Shabbos morning. I set it up before Shabbos, and you'll tell me, well, you're making a malacha before Shabbos, it's making noise. No, I would say the Alexa's on all the time. No one's going to suspect that I set it up on Shabbos. They might suspect I spoke to the Alexa on Shabbos, but I set it up even beforehand. Nonetheless, you can violate this gezeira of Shema, Yisak, and Kleshir, even if you're entirely passive. You've done nothing. You can still violate it. So you can't have Alexa say to you Shabbos morning what the weather is going to be. Because even if you're violating nothing, you're using a musical utensil, is prohibited if it's happening at your behest, on your behalf. How do I know? Because of the following idea. As we know, the general principle, one is allowed to violate a double derabbanan b'makom mitzvah. We call shvus to shvus b'makom mitzvah. Let's say, for example, a person comes to his bedroom. On Shabbos, and by accident, the light was left on. So you're allowed to ask a nachri to turn the light off. Why? I need to sleep in the room on Shabbos. If I have 1,000 other rooms I could sleep in, you can't do this. But if this is the room I have to sleep in, and you know, some individual by accident turned on the light, so you can ask a nachri to turn it off. Why? Turning off a light is only derabbanan. I don't need the turned off light per se. I just don't want the light here. I don't need the product of the malacha. I just don't want the light here. It's malacha shein tzricha leguf. It's only derabbanan. And asking a nachri to do it is a derabbanan. A double derabbanan is mutter b'makom oneg Shabbos, the mitzvah of Shabbos. Shecht even believes you could turn it off with your elbow. If you have no nachri available, shvusta, it's in an abnormal way, kalachar yad, I don't need the product of the malacha, shvusta, shvust, b'makom mitzvah is permitted. So, fine. So how come no one ever came up with the following idea? Everyone, we all know, you know, the competition regarding who can make the better simcha, you know, who's going to make the bigger bar mitzvah, the biggest Shabbos Sheva brachas. How come no one came up with the idea, shvusta, shvust is mutter b'makom mitzvah, that's not a secret. So, and playing musical instruments is only us at the Rabbanan. No electricity involved. I'm playing a guitar. Also, the rabbanon. I could ask a nachri to do it. That would be a shvus to shvus. But makom simchas chasim v'kala. We are going to have the best Shabbos Shevi brachas ever by the kiddush. It's going to be a 8-piece band. How come no one ever thought of it? So they did think of it. They did. Shulchan Aruch discusses it over here in the last source, Oischav Gimel. Shulchan Aruch says, discusses it, and the Mishnah Berurah says that we don't do this. We who only allow a shvus to shvus b'makom mitzvah, this is not permitted. Why is it not permitted? So perhaps it's not permitted, Shecht explains in a sefer, Eretz HaTzvi, it's not permitted because one can violate this gzeirah, shem yisak and kleshir, even if I haven't done anything. Why? What's the fear? The fear is if the guitar breaks, I might come to fix it. I don't have to be the one playing it to fix it. As long as it's being played on my behalf, at my behest, and because I arranged for it to be played, so even if the nachri is the one who's physically doing it, I can violate that gezeira passively. Because if it breaks, I might come to fix it. So if Alexa doesn't announce the weather, I might start like, Alexa, where's my weather? You know, and then you might come to push the button in the Alexa to tell you the weather. So since, even if you are passive, you set it up before Shabbos to announce the weather to you on Shabbos, I still think it would be a problem of using an instrument, at least, that's made to make noise. In my opinion, I think it might even be an instrument that's a musical instrument, because Alexa does play music, and would be part of the Gzeira, Shema Yisak, and Klei Shir. Again, this is assuming if nothing physically, visibly changes. If something visibly changes, then we have Hashmaz Kol,
and we have the, you know, we have the Gzeira Semi Yisak and Klei Shir. But if something physically changes, which is the reality now with regards to Mos Alexos, so then that's considered to be your action. You spoke, a physical change occurred, and as we saw already, that's considered to be your action, would be prohibited on Shabbos. If you know anything, though, about the voice recognition technology, what's unique about it? What's the breakthrough of Alexa? We always had this kind of stuff that turned on with sound. The breakthrough of Alexa is it's always listening to you, if you didn't know that. The big brother, big sister, is always listening. Is always listening, and it's waiting to your command. It's Eved Nirtza, waiting to do whatever you want. That's the whole kunst of the voice recognition technology. So then some have suggested maybe you have to turn it off, you have to mute the Alexa, because even if you don't command it to do anything, it might be a good idea. If I've said Alaska, and it turns on. I don't say Alaska that often, but if you say it, it could turn on. You said other things, and all of a sudden Alexa turns on. So, but that's, you don't intend for that to happen. It doesn't happen often, so I don't think that's really a concern, but Alexa is always listening to you. So some have suggested, well, then you really have to turn it off on Shabbos. It's always listening to you. I don't think that that's the case because nothing changes. And the first rule, Melech Shabbos, as we began with this, Lo Sase Kol Melecha, that something has to change on Shabbos in order for, you know, to violate Melech. There has to be some visible change. If nothing changes, nothing happens, you don't hear anything, nothing, can't be a violation of Melech Shabbos, even if it happens to be using more electricity. So I don't think that that would necessarily be a problem, leaving the Alexa on. Let me just conclude, though, with one word, perhaps about what the hashkafa of all of this contains. You know, in last week's parsha, the pasuk says that Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded us in Shabbos, Ladas, Ki Ani Hashem Mikadoshchem, in order so that we should know that Kadosh Baruch Hu is the one who made us holy, and he gave us Shabbos. So the Gemara comments in Masechta Shabbos, that why did Kadosh Baruch Hu have to tell us about Shabbos, Ladas, Ki Ani Hashem Mikadoshchem? Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a great matana of Shabbos. When a person gives a present to his friend, Tzarech Lodio, you have to let him know about it. You have to let him know that you gave him a present. So the Gemara, though, asks a contradiction. Because when Moshe Rabbeinu descends from our Sinai, so the pasuk says, V'lo yada Moshe ki karan or pana. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know, but his face was glowing. So the Gemara asks, why didn't Hakadosh Baruch Hu have to tell him? If you give a present to your friend, you got to tell him. So Gemara says, no, because Moshe Rabbeinu is going to find that out. It's a milso davidi legluye. He's going to look in the mirror. He'll see his face is glowing. You don't have to tell a person about a present if it's staring him in the face. But Shabbos, the Gemara says, most people, it's not a milso davidi legluye. Not everybody realizes the matana of Shabbos. So to rights of Tzaddik in the pre-Tzaddik, he says, sometimes people go into Shabbos and, you know, they focus on taking a nap, getting in their sleep, and reading a novel, whatever they do on Shabbos. And they wonder, how come my Shabbos experience is not exciting and inspiring like it perhaps once was in the past? And the answer is, because we have to recognize the present that Shabbos is, and to invest in Shabbos, and to recognize what Shabbos is all about. Shabbos doesn't necessarily happen on its own. Even though we celebrate Shabbos because commemorate the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu rested on Shabbos, but Shabbos doesn't necessarily happen all by itself. Shabbos is something that we have to invest in and to think about how to make the Shabbos more inspiring for ourselves. So instead of looking for ways, you know, sometimes people are always looking for ways how to get around things on Shabbos, and maybe we could use the Alexa on Shabbos, we should take, you know, even the bigger picture that Shabbos is really for us to unplug from all these activities and to plug into Shabbos and recharge our batteries, our spiritual batteries on Shabbos, and make the most of the great present of Shabbos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. Okay. Thank you all for